Chapter 13. Terror welled in my throat. I was in trouble. I screamed for help. A gloved hand clamped over my mouth. Biting into the leather, I tasted ashes but couldn't reach skin. The blacksmiths grabbed my arms and pushed me forward, while the farmers walked in front, blocking me from sight. In all the commotion around the dance tent, nobody noticed my abduction. I struggled, dragged my feet, and kicked. Their pace never slowed. I was lugged farther away from the lights and safety of the festival. Craning my neck, I looked for a way to escape. The blacksmith next to me moved closer to block my meager view. His thick beard was filled with soot, and half of it had been singed off. We stopped behind a dark tent. The farmer stepped aside, and I saw a shadow pull away from the fabric.
"Did anyone notice? Did anyone follow you?" the shadow asked with a woman's voice.
"It went perfect. Everyone was focused on the dancers," the blacksmith with the leather gloves replied.
"Good. Kill her now," the woman ordered.
A knife flashed in Leather Gloves' hand. I renewed my struggle, managing to break free for an instant. But the farmers pinned my arms while Singed Beard grabbed my legs. They held me suspended above the ground. Leather Gloves raised his weapon.
"No knives, you idiot. Think of the bloody mess. Use this."
She handed Leather Gloves a long, thin strap. In a blink, the knife disappeared. He wrapped the garrote around my neck.
"No!"
I screamed, but my protest was cut off along with my air supply as he tightened the strap. Intense pressure squeezed my neck. I jerked my limbs in vain. White dots swirled before my eyes. A faint buzzing sound dribbled from my lips. Too faint. The survival instinct that had saved me from Brazel's guards and Rayad's torture was too weak this time. Over the roar of blood in my ears, I heard the woman say,
"Hurry up, she's starting to project."
Ready to step off the edge of consciousness, a drunken voice said,
"Excuse me, sirs, do you know where I can get a refill?"
The pressure on my neck lessened as Leather Gloves drew his knife. I let my body go limp and was rewarded by being dumped on the ground. The other three men stepped over me to face the intruder. Suppressing the urge to gasp for breath, I sucked in air with desperation. I muffled my efforts, unwilling to let anyone know I could still breathe. From my new position, I saw Leather Gloves lunge toward the drunk. The clang of metal rang through the air as the knife stabbed into the man's pewter beer mug instead of his chest. With a hard jerk of his wrist, the mug blurred into motion. The knife flew through the air, embedding into the fabric of the tent. Then the drunk struck Leather Gloves on the head with the mug. Leather Gloves crumpled to the ground. The others, mere steps away when their companion went down, rushed the intruder. The farmers grabbed his upper arms and shoulders while Singed Beard punched him twice in the face. Using the farmers to support his weight, the drunk lifted both legs off the ground and wrapped them around Singed Beard's neck. With a loud snap, Singed Beard fell. Still clutching his mug, the drunk swung it to the right into one farmer's groin. As the farmer doubled over, the drunk brought the mug up, smashing it into the farmer's face. Then the intruder swept his beer mug to the left and slammed it into the other farmer's nose. Blood gushing, the farmer yelped in pain and released his grip on the drunk. The drunk launched a second blow to the farmer's temple. The farmer collapsed to the ground without a sound. The fight had lasted seconds. The woman hadn't moved at all. Her intent gaze had been focused on the skirmish. Recognizing her as the dark-skinned woman I had spotted twice before at the festival, I wondered what she would do now that her goons were beaten. Regaining some strength, I contemplated my odds of reaching the knife in the tent before she did. The drunk wiped blood off his face. Bodies were littered around his feet. I tried to stand on shaky legs. The woman's head snapped toward me as if she had forgotten I was there. Then she started to sing. Her sweet, melodious tune wound its way through my mind.
"Relax," it said. "Lie down. Be still."
Yes, I thought as I sank back down. My body mellowed. I felt as if she were tucking me into bed, drawing the blanket up to my chin. but then the blanket was yanked over my head, pushing against my mouth and nose, suffocating me. I thrashed, wildly clawing my face to remove the imaginary blanket. Out of nowhere, Valak appeared before me, yelling in my ear, shaking my shoulders. Stupidly, belatedly, I realized he was the drunk. Who else but Valak could win a fight against four large men when armed only with a beer mug? "Recite poisons in your mind," Valak shouted. I ignored him. Lassitude overcame me. I ceased fighting. All I wanted to do was sink into the darkness and follow the music to its depths.
"Recite. Now. That's an order."
Habit saved me. Without thought, I obeyed Valak. Names of poisons marched through my mind. The music stopped. The pressure on my face eased, and I could breathe again. I gasped noisily.
"Keep reciting," he said.
The woman and the knife had disappeared. Valak pulled me to my feet. I swayed, but he steadied me with an arm on my shoulder. I clutched his hand for a second, suppressing the urge to throw myself sobbing into his arms. He had saved my life. When I regained my balance, Valak went back to the men. I knew Singed Beard was dead, but I was unsure of the others. Valak turned one prone form over and cursed.
"Southerners," he said with disgust.
He moved around the others, feeling for pulses.
"Two alive. I'll have them taken to the castle for questioning."
"What about the woman?" I croaked. Talking was painful.
"Gone."
"Will you search for her?" Valak gave me a strange look.
"Yelena, she's a southern magician. I took my eyes off her, so there's no way I can find her now."
He grabbed my arm and steered me toward the festival. My muscles trembled as the shock of the attack worked through my body. It took a while for his words to sink in.
"Magician?" I asked.
I thought they were banished from Ixia.
Killed on sight was more like it, but I couldn't bring myself to say those words aloud.
"Although very unwelcome, some visit Ixia anyway."
But I thought...
"Not now. I'll explain later. Right now I want you to catch up with Rand and his friends. Pretend nothing has happened. I doubt she'll try again tonight."
The bright firelight stabbed my eyes. Valak and I stayed in the shadows until we spotted Rand near the acrobatics tent. He was searching for me and calling my name. Valak motioned for me to join my friend. I had taken only two steps when Valak said, "Yelena, wait." I turned. Valak waved me closer. When I reached him, his hand reached toward my neck. I stepped back, but recovered and stood still. His hand brushed my skin as he pulled the garrote off my throat. He handed it to me as if it was a poisonous snake. Shivering in disgust, I flung it to the ground. Rand's relief, when he saw me emerge from the crowd, rolled off him like a breaking wave. I hesitated. Why would he be so concerned? For all he knew, I had only been lost. I caught a sweet whiff of wine as Rand approached.
"Yelena, where have you been?" his words slurred.
I hadn't realized he had drunk that much wine, which would explain why he had been so desperate to find me. Alcohol poisoned the mind, exaggerated the emotions. The tent was too crowded. I needed some air. My voice caught on the word air as the horror of being strangled swept through me. I glanced back at the shadows. Was Valak still watching? Or had he gone to arrest those men? And where was the dark-skinned woman? Earlier, I had been so happy to get out of the castle, but now I wanted nothing more than to have strong stone walls around me, and to be safely back in Valak's suite. Now that was an odd combination, the words Valak and safe in the same thought. "I thought I'd catch up with you later," I lied to Rand as I scanned the festival crowd. I didn't enjoy deceiving him. After all, he was my friend. Maybe even a good friend who had been concerned enough to search for me when I had been separated from him, and who probably would have been the only person to be upset by my murder. Despite his fight on my behalf, I was certain that Valak would have only been annoyed at having to train a new food taster. The fire dance had just ended and people poured from the tent. The rest of the kitchen group waited outside. Delana had joined them. Rand dropped my arm like a lump of dough and went over to her. She smiled at him, teasing him about chasing after the food taster when he had promised to meet her. Drunkenly, he begged for her forgiveness, explaining that he couldn't afford to lose me since I had helped him win the baking contest. She laughed. Throwing one of her heartwarming smiles my way, Delana hugged Rand, and arm in arm they headed back to the castle. The rest of us followed. I found myself once again last in the procession, but this time I had Liza as a companion. She scowled at me. "I don't know what Rand sees in you," she said. Not a friendly way to start a conversation. "Excuse me," I said, keeping my tone neutral. "He missed the fire dance looking for you. And ever since you came around, the kitchen routine has been destroyed. The staff's flustered."
"What are you talking about?"
"Before you showed up, Rand's mood swings were predictable. Cheerful and content when Delana was happy and the gambling was profitable. Moody and sullen when they weren't. Then..."
Liza stressed the word. Her plain cornmeal face creased into an ugly expression, which she aimed at me.
"You befriend him. He starts snarling at the kitchen staff for no reason. Even winning a big payoff, Rand's still depressed. It's frustrating. We've come to the conclusion that you must be trying to steal him away from Delana. We want you to stop, leave him alone, and stay out of the kitchen."
Liza had picked the worst time to accost me. Having just escaped a brush with death had put matters into perspective. I wasn't in the best frame of mind. Pure rage flared. I grabbed her arm and spun her around to face me. We stood nose to nose. "You have concluded? The combined brain power of the kitchen staff probably couldn't light a candle. Our friendship is none of your business. So I suggest you rethink your hypothesis. If there's a problem in the kitchen, then deal with it. You're wasting your time whining about it to me." I pushed her away. I could tell by her shocked expression that she hadn't expected such a fierce response. Too bad for her, I thought as I hurried to catch up with the others, leaving her to walk alone. What did she want me to do? Had she assumed that I would meekly agree to stop talking to Rand just to smooth things in the kitchen? I wasn't going to let her unload her problems on me. I was already overloaded with my own. Like, why would a magician from Citya want to kill me? At the castle, I said goodnight to Rand and Delana and rushed to Valak's suite. As much as I wanted to be inside, I cajoled one of the outer door guards to check Valak's rooms for intruders before I went in. Murder attempts combined with an overactive imagination made me jumpy, fearing ambushes. Even sitting on the couch in the middle of the living room with every lantern blazing, I didn't feel safe until Valak arrived near dawn. "Haven't you slept?" he asked. A fist-sized dark purple bruise on his jaw contrasted against his pale skin. "No, but neither of you," I said peevishly. "I can sleep all day. You need to taste the commander's breakfast in an hour." "What I need are answers." "To what questions?" Valak began to extinguish the lanterns. "Why is a southern magician trying to kill me?" "A good question. The very same one I was going to ask you." "How should I know?" I shrugged in frustration. "Brazel's guards I could understand. But magicians? It's not like I've been going around making southern magicians angry." "Ah, that's a shame, since you have a real talent for angering people." Valak sat at his desk and rested his head in his hands. "A southern magician, Yelena. A master-level southern magician. Do you know that there are only 4 master magicians in Citya?" "4. And since the takeover, they've stayed in Citya. On occasion, they send a minion or two with minor magical abilities into the territory to see what we're up to. So far, each spy has been intercepted and dealt with. Commander Ambrose will not tolerate magic in Ixia." The magicians of the King's era had been considered the elite. Treated like royalty, they had been quite influential with the King. According to the history of the takeover, Valak had assassinated every one of them. I wondered how, especially since he couldn't capture that woman tonight. Valak stood up. He grabbed a gray rock off his desk. Tossing the stone from hand to hand, he paced around the living room. Remembering Valak's near miss with the last rock he'd held, I pulled my feet off the floor and hugged my knees to my chest, hoping to make myself a smaller target. "For the Southerners to risk one of their master magicians, the reason has to be..." Valak shook the stone in his hand, searching for the right word. "Momentous. So why are they after you?" He sighed and sank down on the couch next to me. "Well,
Let's try to reason this out. You obviously have some southern blood in your heritage. What? I had never thought about my heritage. I had been found on the street, homeless, and had been taken in by Brazil. Speculation about my parents had only been on whether they were dead or had just abandoned me. I had no memories of my life prior to my arrival at the orphanage. Mostly, I had been thankful that Brazil gave me shelter. For Valak to make such a matter-of-fact statement stunned me. Your coloring is a bit darker than the typical northerner. Your features have a southern quality. Green eyes are very rare in the territory, but are more common in Sitia. Valak misread my frozen expression. It's nothing to be ashamed of. When the king was in power, the border to Sitia was open to commerce and trade. People moved freely between the regions, and marriages were inevitable. I would guess you were left behind right after the takeover when people panicked and fled south before we closed the border. It was complete mayhem. I don't know what they were expecting when the commander came to power. Mass killings? All we did was give everyone a uniform and a job. My mind reeled. Why hadn't I been more curious about my family? I didn't even know what town I had been found in. We had been told daily of our good fortune, reminded that we had food, clothes, shelter, teachers, and even a small allowance. It had been repeatedly pointed out that many children with parents weren't as well off as we were. Was it a form of brainwashing? Well, anyway, I digress, Valak said into the silence. He stood and resumed his pacing. I doubt it was missing family members. They wouldn't want to kill you. Is there anything else besides murdering Rayard that you did in the past? Witnessed a crime? Overheard plans for a rebellion? Anything at all? No, nothing. Valak tapped the rock against his forehead. Then let's assume this has to do with Rayard. Perhaps he was in league with some southerners and your killing him ruined their plans. Maybe they're scheming to retake Ixia. Or they think you know something about this plot. But I've heard nothing about Sitia attacking us. And why would they? Sitia knows the commander is content to stay in the north and vice versa. Valak rubbed a hand over his face before continuing. Perhaps Brazil has gotten creative in his old age and hired southerners to kill you, thereby accomplishing his desire to see you dead without implicating himself. No, that doesn't make sense. Brazil would have hired thugs, no need for a magician. Unless he has connections I'm not aware of, which is highly doubtful. Valak looked around the room. Only half of the lanterns had been extinguished. Setting the rock down, he finished the job just as the timid, pre-dawn light started to brighten the room. He stopped as if he had a sudden thought and scowled at me. What? Magicians will come north to smuggle one of their own kind to safety, Valak said. He studied me. Before I could protest, he asked, Then why kill you? Unless you're a soul finder. They wouldn't want you dead. Valak yawned and gently fingered the bruise on his face. I'm too tired to think straight. I'm going to bed. He walked to the stairs. Soul finder? I had no idea what that was, but more important concerns needed to be addressed. Valak, he paused with a foot on the first step. My antidote. Of course. He continued up the steps. While he was upstairs, I wondered how many times in the future I would have to ask for the antidote. The knowledge that it was keeping me alive poisoned my mind as surely as the butterfly's dust poisoned my body. As the early morning light brightened, I thought of my bed with longing. Valak could sleep, but I had to taste the commander's breakfast soon. Valak came downstairs. Handing me the antidote, he said, You might want to wear your hair down today. Why? I ran my fingers through my hair. The ribbons I had braided were torn and knotted. To cover the marks on your neck. Before going to the commander's office, I hurried to the baths. I had just enough time to wash and change into a clean uniform before I had to appear at breakfast. The garrote had left a bright red ring around my neck that I couldn't cover no matter how I styled my hair. On my way to the commander's office, I saw Liza. She set her mouth in a firm frown and looked away when she passed. Oh, well, I thought, another person I'd angered. I regretted having taken my ire out on her, but I wasn't about to apologize. After all, she had started the argument. Most mornings the commander ignored my arrival. I would taste his breakfast and then sort through his box of Criollo, randomly selecting a piece to verify that no one had poisoned it during the night. Each morning my mouth watered as I anticipated the taste of the bittersweet dessert. Its nutty flavor coating my mouth was the one pleasure I could look forward to during my day. I had argued with Valak that I should test it every time the commander wanted some, but the commander hoarded his supply. He rationed out one piece of Criollo after every meal, and I had heard through Rand that the commander had already requested more from Brazel, along with a copy of the recipe from his cook, Ving. Each morning after placing the commander's breakfast tray on his desk, I would pick up his daily schedule and leave without a word being uttered. But this morning, when I set the tray down, he told me to sit. Perched on the edge of the hard wooden chair facing his desk, I felt a feather of fear brush my stomach. I laced my fingers tight together to keep my face impassive.
Valak has informed me that you had an incident last night. I'm concerned that another attempt on your life will jeopardize our exercise.
The commander's golden eyes regarded me as he sipped his tea.
You have presented Valak with a puzzle, and he has assured me that keeping you alive will aid in a speedy resolution. Convince me that you'll be able to play fugitive without getting yourself killed. According to Valak, you failed to recognize him even after he bumped into you.
My mouth opened, but I closed it as I considered his words. A hastily explained or illogical argument would not sway the commander. Also, I had been given an easy out. Why should I risk my neck for his exercise? I wasn't a skilled spy. I hadn't been able to identify Valak even when I knew he was following me. But then again, it was my neck the murderous assailants were after. If I didn't try to draw them out on my own terms, they'd pick the time and location. I weighed the argument in my head, feeling as though I was forever on a tightrope, unable to decide which way led to the perfect dismount. Walking back and forth until some outside force came along to push me one way or the other. I'm new to the hunt and chase game, I told the commander. For someone untrained, trying to spot a tail in a noisy, crowded festival is a difficult task. It's like asking a child to run when she has just learned how to walk. In the woods, alone and trying to avoid everyone, picking up a tail will be easier and within my abilities. I stopped. No response from the commander, so I continued. If we can lure this magician out, maybe we can discover why she wants to kill me. The commander sat as still as a frog that watched and waited for a fly to come closer. I played my last card. And Valak has assured me he will be following. My use of the commander's word was not lost on him.
We will proceed as planned. I don't expect you to get far, so I doubt we'll see this magician.
He said the word magician as if it left a foul taste in his mouth.
I do expect you to keep quiet about this entire affair. Consider it an order. You're dismissed.
Yes, sir. I left his office. I spent the remainder of the day collecting and borrowing provisions for the exercise, which was scheduled to begin the next morning at dawn. I visited Delana's workroom and the smithy. Just mentioning Valak's name produced remarkable results from the blacksmiths, who hurried to procure the items I said Valak needed. Delana would have given me anything I requested. She seemed disappointed that I only wanted to borrow a leather backpack. "Keep it," she had said. "No one has claimed it. It's been underfoot since I started." I kept her company as she mended uniforms, told me the latest gossip, and fussed about how I needed to eat more. My last stop was the kitchen. With the hope of finding Rand alone, I waited until after the staff had cleaned up dinner. He was standing at a counter, working on menus. Each week's menus had to be approved by the commander before Rand could give them to Liza, who made sure the required food and ingredients were available.
"You look better than I feel," Rand said in a soft tone.
He held his head like a full cup of water, moving slowly as if to avoid spilling over.
"I don't have anything for you to taste today. I haven't had the energy."
"That's okay." I noted his white face and the dark smudges under his eyes. "I won't keep you. I just need to borrow some things."
Interested, Rand almost returned to his jovial self. "Like what?"
"Bread, and some of that glue you invented.
Medic Mommy used it to seal a cut on my arm. It's wonderful stuff. The glue. One of my best recipes yet. Did she tell you how I discovered it? I was trying to make an edible adhesive for this mammoth 10-layer wedding cake and... Rand, I interrupted. I would love to hear the story, and you must promise to tell me another time, but we're both short on sleep.
Oh, yes, you're right.
He pointed to a stack of loaves and said, "Take what you need." While I collected bread, he rummaged around in a drawer, then handed me a jar of white glue.
"It's not permanent. The glue will stick for about a week, then it loses its grip. Anything else?"
Yes. I hesitated, reluctant to make my last request, which was my main reason for wanting to be alone with Rand.
What?
I need a knife. His head jerked. I could see a spark behind his eyes as the memory of how I had killed Rayad flashed through his mind. I saw the gears in his head turning as he weighed our fledgling friendship against this unusual request. I fully expected him to question me as to why I needed a knife. Instead, he asked, "Which one?" "The scariest looking one you've got." Chapter 14. The next morning, I headed out the south gate just as the sun crested the Sol Mountains. Soon, a glorious sweep of sunlight rushed over the valley, indicating the start of the commander's exercise. My heart pulsed with excitement and fear. A strange combination of feelings, but they fueled my steps. I scarcely felt the weight of my backpack. I had worried that the items contained in my knapsack could be considered cheating. After much thought, I decided that a prisoner intent on escaping from the dungeon would save some of her bread rations, smuggle a weapon from the guard room, and steal the other items from the blacksmiths. And if I was stretching things a bit, then so what? No one had told me I must flee with nothing. My determination to escape had increased since the plan had first been proposed. The money was merely a bonus at this point. I wanted to prove the commander wrong. The commander, who thought I wouldn't get far, who had been concerned my death would jeopardize his exercise. Before leaving the castle complex, I had stopped for a moment to view the main building in the daylight. My first impression was that a child had built the palace with his toy blocks. The base of the castle was rectangular. It supported various upper levels of squares, triangles, and cylinders built atop one another in a haphazard fashion. The only attempts at symmetry were the magnificent towers at each corner of the castle. Streaked with brilliantly colored glass windows, the four towers stretched toward the sky. The castle's unusual geometric design intrigued me, and I would have liked to view it from other angles, but Valak had instructed me to leave the complex at dawn, as I only had an hour's head start. Then the soldiers and dogs in pursuit would try to discover which gate I had exited, tracking me from there. Valak had taken one of my uniform shirts in order to give the dogs my scent. I had asked him who would taste the commander's food while I was gone, and he'd given me some vague reply about having others trained in the art of poisoning, who were too valuable to be used on a regular basis. Unlike me. My southern route was an obvious direction, but I didn't plan to maintain it for long. I hoped the soldiers would assume I was headed straight for the border. The castle complex was in Military District 6 and quite close to the southern lands, wedged between MD-7 to the west and MD-5 to the east. The dead king, who had built the complex, had preferred the milder weather. Alternating between jogging and walking, it wasn't long before I entered Snake Forest, avoiding Castletown. While studying some of Valak's maps the previous night, I had noticed that the forest surrounded Castletown on three sides. The northern district of the town faced the castle. Snake Forest also spread out to the east and west like a thin belt of green. At the official southern border, Commander Ambrose's soldiers had cleared 100-foot-wide swath from the Sol Mountains in the east all the way to the Sunset Ocean in the west. Since the takeover, it was a crime for anyone, Ixion or Sishian, to cross this line. I jogged through the forest, making a conspicuous trail. Breaking branches and stomping footprints in the dirt, I remained southbound until I reached a small stream. My hour head start was almost up. I knelt by the stream's bank and reached into the water. Pulling out a handful of mud, I let the water drain through my fingers. I hunched over the stream and smeared the wet sediment on my face and neck. Since I had pulled my hair into a bun, I rubbed mud on my ears and the back of my neck. I hoped the men would guess I had knelt here for a drink. After stamping footprints near the stream's bank to mislead my pursuers into thinking I had walked into the water, I traced my route back until I found a perfect tree. About 6 feet from my path, a Velvat's smooth trunk rose high into the air. The first sturdy branch off the main trunk stretched 15 feet above my head. Trying not to disturb the ground surrounding my scent path, I removed my backpack and pulled out one of the items I had borrowed from the blacksmiths. It was a small metal grappling hook. I tied it to the end of a long, thin rope coiled inside my bag. With my head start gone, a sudden image of guards and dogs exploding from the castle flashed through my mind. Hastily, I threw the hook up to the branch. It missed. I caught it on the way down. Frantic, I threw the hook again. Missed. I calmed my raging pulse and focused on the task. The hook snagged the branch. Confident the hook was secure, I tied the extra line around my waist so it wouldn't drag and put on my backpack. Grabbing the rope with both hands, I pulled my weight off the ground and wrapped my legs around the slack. It had been a long time since I had climbed this way. All the way up the rope, my arm, shoulder, and back muscles complained over my year-long inactivity. Once I reached the top, I straddled the branch and repacked the rope and hook in my backpack. A strong breeze blew from the west. Wanting to stay downwind of the dogs, I spent the next half hour climbing east through the trees until I was well away from my original path. For once, my small size and acrobatic abilities proved a benefit. When I came across a cicada tree, I found a secure nook near the trunk and unslung my backpack. The cicada's leaf was the biggest that grew in the snake forest. Its circular-shaped green leaf, spotted with brown, was perfect for my needs. I sat still for a minute, listening for sounds of pursuit. Birds chirped and insects buzzed. I heard the quick rustling of leaves as a deer moved. I detected the faint baying of dogs, but it might have been just my imagination. There was no sign of Valak, but knowing him, he had to be close behind. Taking Rand's glue from my pack, I stripped leaves off the tree. When I had enough, I removed my shirt and glued the leaves onto it. Feeling self-conscious in just my sleeveless undershirt, I worked fast. I covered the shirt, then my pants, boots, and backpack with leaves. Finally, I glued a large leaf onto my hair and two smaller ones onto the backs of my hands, leaving my fingers free to move. Rand's warning that the glue only held for a week passed through my mind, and I smiled as I envisioned his reaction when he saw me walking around the castle with leaves attached to my head and hands. I didn't have a mirror, but I hoped I had camouflaged my entire body in green and brown. I wasn't concerned with the small black patches that might show through. It was the bright red of my uniform shirt that would immediately give me away. Too nervous to stay in one place for long, I continued to climb east as fast and quiet as I could. My eastern direction wandered. Since I was unwilling to let my scent touch the ground, I had to detour either north or south on occasion. My grappling hook and rope were employed many times as I used them to bring branches within reach or to swing from tree to tree. My muscles protested the abuse, but I ignored them. Laughing to myself whenever I overcame a difficult hurdle, I enjoyed the pure freedom of traveling above the ground. I grinned as I sweated through the entire morning. Eventually, I knew I would have to head south again because that was the only place a fugitive could find safety and asylum. Cydia welcomed the refugees from Ixia. Their government had had an open relationship with the king, trading exotic spices, fabrics, and foods for metals, precious stones, and coal. When the commander ceased trade, Ixia lost mainly luxury items while Cydia's resources became limited. worry that Cydia would try to conquer the north for needed resources, had dissipated when the Sishan geologists discovered that their Emerald Mountains, a continuation of the Northern Seoul Mountains, were rich in ores and minerals. Now, it seemed, Cydia was content to keep a wary eye on the north. Soon my climb through the trees intersected a well-used path in the forest. I saw deep wagon ruts in the hard-packed dirt. The road was probably a part of the main east-west trading route, which turned north for a few miles to detour around Lake Kira before resuming its easterly direction. The lake was just over the border of MD5. Settling on a sturdy branch within sight of the path, I leaned back on the tree's trunk, rested, and ate my lunch while deciding where to go next. After a while, the soothing noises from the forest almost lulled me to sleep. "See anything?" A male voice beneath me disrupted the quiet. Startled, I grabbed the branch to keep from falling. Caught, I froze in shock.
"Nope. All clear," another man's voice replied from a distance. His tone was rough with annoyance.
There had been no barking to alert me. It must be the other team. I had been so worried about the dogs that I had forgotten about the smaller team. Too cocky, I thought. I deserved to be caught early. I waited for them to order me down, but they remained quiet. Looking below, I searched the forest but couldn't locate them. Maybe they hadn't seen me after all. After a bit of rustling, two men emerged from the dense underbrush. They, too, wore green and brown camouflage, although their snug overalls and face paint were more professional than my glued-together ensemble.
"Stupid idea, coming east. She's probably at the southern border by now," Rough Voice grumbled to his partner.
"That's what the dog boys figured, even though the hounds lost her scent," said the second man. I smiled. I'd outsmarted the dogs. At least I had managed to accomplish that much.
"I don't know if I followed the logic of going east," Rough Voice said.
The other man sighed. "You're not supposed to follow the logic. The captain ordered us east. We go east. He seems to think she'll head deeper into MD5, familiar territory for her."
"Well, what if she doesn't come back? Another stupid idea, using the food taster," Rough Voice complained. "She's a criminal."
"That's not our concern. That's Valak's problem. I'm sure if she got away, he would take care of her." I wondered if Valak was listening. We both knew he wouldn't need to hunt me down. All he had to do was wait the poison out. I found the conversation helpful, especially the fact that it wasn't common knowledge that I'd been poisoned.
"Let's go. We're supposed to rendezvous with the captain at the lake."
"Oh, and try to keep the noise down. You sound like a panicked moose crashing through the woods," the smarter man chided.
"Oh, yeah. Like you could hear me over your specially trained woodland animal footsteps," Rough Voice countered. "It was like listening to two deer humping each other."
The men laughed and in a wink disappeared into the underbrush, one on each side of the path. I strained to hear them moving, but couldn't tell if they were gone. I waited until I couldn't bear the inactivity. The men had decided my next move. The lake was to the east. Climbing through the trees, I headed south. As I worked my way along, an odd, creepy feeling burrowed its way into my mind. Somehow I became convinced that the men I had seen on the path were following me, hunting me. An uncontrollable urge to move fast pushed on me like a strong hand on the back of my neck, propelling me forward. When I couldn't stand it any longer, I threw all precautions of keeping hidden and quiet aside. I dropped to the ground and bolted. When I burst into a small clearing in the trees, I stopped. The overpowering feeling of panic had disappeared. My sides stitched with pain. Dropping my pack, I collapsed onto the ground, gasping for breath. I cursed myself for such panicky behavior.
"Nice outfit," a familiar voice said. Dread and fear gave me the energy to jump to my feet.
No one in sight. Yet. I ripped open my backpack and pulled the knife. My heart performed somersaults in my chest. I turned in slow circles as I scanned the forest, searching for the voice of death.
Chapter 15. Laughter surrounded me.
Your weapon won't do you any good. I could easily convince you that it was your heart you want to plunge that knife into, instead of mine.
I spotted her across the clearing, clad in a loose green camouflage shirt cinched tight at the waist and identical colored pants. The southern magician lounged against a tree with her arms crossed in front of her, her posture casual. Expecting the southern magician's goons to attack me from the forest, I kept the knife out in front of me, turning in circles.
Relax, the magician said. We're alone.
I stopped circling but retained a firm grip on my weapon. Why should I trust you? Last time we met, you ordered me killed. Even supplied that handy little strap. The sudden realization that she hadn't needed her thugs at all leaped into my mind. I began reciting poison names in my head. The magician laughed like someone amused by a small child.
That won't help you. The only reason reciting worked at the festival was because Valak was there.
She stepped closer. I waved the knife in a threatening gesture.
Yelena, relax. I projected into your mind to guide you here. If I wanted you dead, I would have pushed you from the trees. Accidents are less trouble than murders in Ixia, a fact you are well aware of.
I ignored her jibe. Why didn't I have an accident at the festival, or at another time?
I need to be close to you. It takes a lot of energy to kill someone. I'd rather use mundane methods if possible. The festival was the first time I could get close to you without Valak nearby, or so I thought.
She shook her head in frustration. Why didn't you kill Valak with your magic at the festival, I asked. Then I would have been easy prey.
Magic doesn't work on Valak. He's resistant to its effects.
Before I could ask for more information, she hurried on.
I don't have time to explain everything. Valak will be here soon, so I'll make this brief.
Yelena, I'm here to make you an offer. I remembered my last offer, to be the food taster or to be executed. What could you possibly offer me? I have a job, color-coordinated uniforms, and a boss to die for. What more could I need?
Asylum, Incitia, she said, her tone tight. So you can learn to control and use your power.
Power? The word squeaked out of my mouth before I could stop it. What power?
Oh, come on. How could you not know? You've used it at least twice at the castle.
My mind whirled. She was talking about my survival instinct. That strange buzzing that possessed me whenever my life was in serious jeopardy. My body numbed with dread. I felt as if she had just told me I had a terminal disease.
I was working undercover nearby when I was overcome by your screaming, raw power. Once I was able to pinpoint the source to Commander Ambrose's food taster, I knew a rescue effort to smuggle you south would be impossible. You're either with Valak, or he's been one step behind you. Even now I'm taking an extraordinary risk. But it's too dangerous to have a wild magician in the north. It's amazing you lasted this long without being discovered. The only choice left was termination. A task that proved more difficult than I'd first imagined, but not impossible.
And now I'm supposed to trust you? Do you think I'd meekly follow you to Citia like a lamb to the slaughter?
Yelena, if you weren't playing fugitive, which brought you out of the castle and away from Valak, you'd be dead by now.
I wasn't sure if I believed her. What would she gain by helping me? Why go to all this effort if she had the power to kill me? Something else must be motivating her.
You don't believe me, she grunted in frustration.
Okay, how about a little demonstration? She tilted her head to the side and pressed her lips together. A searing, hot pain whipped through my mind like lightning. Wrapping my arms and hands around my head, I tried in vain to block the onslaught. Then a fist-sized force slammed into my forehead. I jolted backward and fell to the ground. Sprawled on my back, I felt the pain disappear as fast as it had arrived. Through vision blurred with tears, I squinted at the magician. She still stood near the edge of the clearing. She hadn't touched me, at least not physically. The weight of her mental connection felt like a wool cap encompassing my skull. "What the hell was that?" I demanded. "What happened to the singing?" I was dazed by her attack, the air on my body feeling as if it had liquefied, and when I moved to a sitting position, the dense air swirled and lapped at my skin.
I sang at the festival because I was trying to be kind. This was an effort to convince you that if I wanted you dead, I wouldn't be wasting my time talking to you now. And I certainly wouldn't wait until you were in Scythia.
Her head cocked as if she listened to an invisible person whispering in her ear.
Valak has dropped all pretense of stealth. He's traveling fast. Two men pursue him, but the men believe they're chasing you.
She paused, and her mouth settled once again into a hard line as she concentrated.
I can slow the men down, but not Valak.
She focused her faraway gaze on me.
Are you coming with me?
I couldn't speak. The thought that her idea of kindness was singing someone to death had left me quite distracted. I stared at her in complete astonishment.
No, I had to force the word out.
What?
It wasn't the answer she'd expected.
You enjoy being the food taster?
No, I don't. But I'll die if I go with you.
You'll die if you stay.
I'll take my chances.
I stood, brushed the dirt off my legs, and retrieved my knife. The last thing I wanted to do was explain to the magician about the poison in my blood. Why give her another weapon to be used against me? But with her mental link to me, I only had to think about the butterfly's dust, and she knew.
There are antidotes, she said.
Can you find one before morning, I asked. She shook her head.
No, we would need more time. Our healers would need to understand where the poison is hiding. It could be in your blood, or in your muscles, or anywhere. And they would need to know how it kills in order to banish it.
When she saw my complete lack of understanding, the magician continued.
The source of our power, what you call magic, is like a blanket surrounding the world. Our minds tap into this source, pulling a slender thread down to enhance our magical abilities to turn them on. Every person has the latent ability to read minds and influence the physical world without touching it, but they don't have the ability to connect with the power source.
She sighed, looking unhappy.
Yelena, we can't have your wild power flaring uncontrolled. Without knowing it, you're pulling power. Instead of a thread, you're grabbing whole sections and bunching the power blanket around you. As you grow older, you will have amassed so much power that it will explode or flame out. This flame out will not only kill you, it will warp and damage the power source itself, ripping a hole in the blanket. We can't risk a flame out, and soon you'll be untrainable. That is why we have no choice but to terminate you before you reach that point.
How long do I have? I asked.
1 year. Maybe a little more if you can control yourself. After that, you'll be beyond our help. And we need you, Yelena. Powerful magicians are scarce in Scythia.
My mind raced over my options. Her display of power had convinced me she was more of a threat than I had ever imagined, and that I would be a complete idiot to trust her at all. However, if I didn't go, she'd kill me where I stood. So I delayed the inevitable. Give me a year. A year to find a permanent antidote, to find a way to escape to Scythia. A year free from worrying that you're plotting my death. She stared deep into my eyes. Her mental touch pressed harder in my mind as she searched for a sign that I might be deceiving her.
All right. 1 year. My pledge to you.
She paused. Go on, I said. I know you want to end this meeting with some kind of threat. Maybe a dire warning? Feel free. I'm used to it. I wouldn't know how to deal with a conversation that didn't include one.
You put on such a brave front. But I know if I took another step toward you, you'd wet your pants.
With your blood? I brandished my knife. But I couldn't keep a straight face. The boast sounded ridiculous even to my own ears. I snickered. She laughed. The release of tension made me giddy, and soon I was laughing and crying. The magician then grew sober. Cocking her head again, she listened to her invisible companion.
Valak is close. I must go.
Tell me one more thing.
What?
How did you know I'd be the fugitive?
Magic?
No.
I have sources of information that I'm unable to reveal.
I nodded my understanding. Asking for details had been worth a try.
Be careful, Yelena, she said, vanishing into the forest.
I realized that I didn't even know her name.
Iris,
she whispered in my mind, and then her mental touch withdrew. As I thought about everything she had told me, I realized I had many more questions to ask her, all more important than who had leaked information. Knowing she was gone, though, I suppressed the desire to call after her. Instead, I dropped to the ground. With my body shaking, I replaced my knife in the backpack. I pulled out my water bottle and took a long drink, wishing the container was filled with something stronger, something that would burn my throat on its way down. Something to focus on besides the disjointed and lost feeling that threatened to consume me. I needed time to think before Valak and the two men caught up with me. Taking out the rope and grappling hook, I searched once again for a suitable tree and re-entered the forest canopy. Moving south, I let the physical effort of climbing keep my body busy, while I sorted through all the information the magician had given me. When I reached another path in the forest, I found a comfortable position on a tree branch within sight of the trail. I secured myself to the trunk of the tree with my rope. The magician had promised me 1 year, but I didn't want to tempt her with an easy target. She could change her mind. After all, what did I know about magicians and their pledges? She claimed I had power, magical power that I had always thought of as my survival instinct. When I had been in those dire situations, I had felt possessed, as if someone else more capable of dealing with the crisis took temporary control over my body, rescued me from death, and then left. Could the strange buzzing sound that erupted from my throat and saved my life really be the same as Iris's power? If so, I must keep my magic a secret, and I had to gain some control of the power to keep it from flaming out. But how? Avoid life-threatening situations? I scoffed at the notion of evading trouble. Trouble seemed to find me regardless of my efforts. Orphaned, tortured, poisoned, cursed with magic, the list grew longer by the day. I didn't have the time to resolve these complex issues that circled without end in my mind. Focusing my thoughts on the present, I studied the trail below. Small saplings threatened to retake the narrow forest path. It must have been one of the abandoned roadways used to trade with Citya. I waited for Valak. He would demand an explanation about my encounter with the magician, and I was ready to give one. My only warning of Valak's arrival was a gentle rustling of the branch above mine. I looked up to see him uncoiling from the upper branch like a snake. He dropped soundlessly beside me. Green camouflage seemed to be the outfit of choice today. Valak's was skin-tight and came equipped with a hood to cover his hair and neck. Brown and green paint streaked his face, causing the bright blue of his eyes to stand out in stark contrast. I looked down at my own ragtag outfit. Some of the leaves had frayed at the edges, and my uniform had sustained many tears from climbing through the trees. Next time I planned to flee through the woods, I'd persuade Delana to sew me an outfit like Valak's.
You're unbelievable, Valak said.
Is that good or bad?
Good. I assumed you would give the soldiers a good chase, and you did. But I never expected this.
Valak pointed at my leaf-covered shirt and swept his arms wide, indicating the trees. And to top it all off, you encountered the magician and somehow managed to survive. Sarcasm tinged Valak's voice during his last comment. His way of asking for an explanation, I suppose. I don't know what exactly happened.
I found myself tearing through the woods until I reached a clearing where she was waiting. The only thing she told me was that I had ruined her plans by killing Rayad, and then pain slammed into my skull. The memory of her attack was still fresh in my mind, so I allowed the full horror of it to show on my face. If Valak ever suspected what had really happened, I wouldn't live the year the magician had granted me. And mentioning Rayad's name supported one of Valak's theories about why the magician was after me. I took a deep breath. I started reciting poisons. I tried to push the pain away. Then the attack stopped, and she said you were getting too close. When I opened my eyes, she had disappeared. Why didn't you wait for me in the clearing? I didn't know where she had gone. I felt safer in the trees, knowing you'd be able to find me. Valak considered my explanation. I covered my nervousness by sorting through my backpack. After a long while, he grinned.
We certainly proved the commander wrong. He thought you'd be caught by mid-morning.
I smiled with relief. Taking advantage of his good mood, I asked, "Why does the commander hate magicians so much?" The pleased expression dropped from Valak's face.
"He has many reasons. They were the king's colleagues, aberrations of nature, who use their power for purely selfish and greedy reasons. They amassed wealth and jewels, curing the sick only if the dying's family could pay their exorbitant fee. The king's magicians played mind games with everyone, taking delight in causing havoc. The commander wants nothing to do with them."
Curious, I pushed on. "What about using them for his purposes?"
"He thinks magicians are not to be trusted.
But I'm of two minds about that," Valak said. He gazed out over the forest floor as he talked.
"I understand the commander's concern. Killing all the king's magicians was a good strategy. But I think the younger generation born with power could be recruited for our intelligence network.
We disagree on this issue, and despite my arguments, the commander has..." Valak stopped. He seemed reluctant to continue. "Has what?"
"Ordered that those born with even the slightest amount of magical power be killed immediately."
I had known about the execution of the southern spies and the magicians from the king's era, but imagining babies being ripped from their mother's arms made me gasp in horror. Those poor children.
"It's brutal, but not that brutal," Valak said.
A sadness had softened his eyes.
"The ability to connect with the power source doesn't occur until after puberty, which is around age 16. It usually takes another year for someone other than their family to notice and report them. Then, they either escape to Sitia, or I find them."
His words had the weight of a wooden beam pressing down on my shoulders. I found it difficult to breathe. 16 was when Brazel had recruited me, when my survival instinct had started to flare, defending against Brazel and Rayad's torture. Had they been trying to test me for magic? But why didn't they report me? Why hadn't Valak come? I had no idea what Brazel wanted, and knowing now about my power only added yet another way I could die. If Valak discovered my magic, I was dead. If I didn't find a way to go to Sitia, I was dead. If someone poisoned the commander's food, I was dead. If Brazel built his factory and sought revenge for his son, I was dead. Dead, 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 and dead. Death by butterfly's dust was beginning to look attractive. It was the only scenario where I would get to choose when, where, and how I died. I would have sunk into a deep, brooding bout of self-pity, but Valak grabbed my arm and put a finger to his green lips. The distant sounds of hoofbeats and men talking reached my ears. My first thought was that it was an illusion sent by the magician, but soon enough I saw mules pulling wagons. The width of the wagons filled the entire path, saplings and bushes thwacked against the wheels. Two mules pulled one wagon, and one man dressed in a brown trader's uniform led the team. There were six wagons and six men who conversed among themselves as they traveled. From my post in the tree, I could see that the first five wagons were loaded with burlap sacks that might have been filled with grain or flour. The last wagon held strange, oval-shaped yellow pods. Snake Forest was just bustling with activity today, I thought in wonder.
All we needed was the fire dancers to jump from the trees to entertain us all.
Valak and I sat still in our tree as the men passed below us. Their uniforms were soaked with sweat, and I noticed a few of them had rolled up their pants so they wouldn't trip. One man's belt was cinched tight, causing the extra material to bunch around his waist, while another's stomach threatened to rip through his buttons. These poor traders obviously didn't have a permanent residence. If they had, their seamstress would never have permitted them to walk around looking like that. When they were out of sight and hearing range, Valak whispered, "Don't move. I'll be back." He dropped to the ground and followed the caravan. I fidgeted on my branch, wondering if the other two men Iris had said were tracking Valak would find me before he returned. The sun was disappearing in the west, and cooler air was replacing the day's heat. Muscles stiff from inactivity throbbed as the last of my energy faded. The strenuous day of climbing caught up to me. For the first time, the possibility of spending a night alone in the forest made me apprehensive. I had never imagined staying free this long. At last, Valak returned and waved me down from the tree. I moved with care, fumbling with the rope around my waist as my abused muscles trembled with fatigue. He carried a small sack, which he handed to me. Inside were five of the yellow pods that had been stacked in the last wagon. I took one out. Now that I could see it up close, I noticed that the elongated oval pod was about 8 inches in length, with close to 10 furrows running from one end to the other. It was thick around the middle. With two hands wrapped around its center, my fingers just overlapped. I was amazed by Valak's ability to steal them in the daylight from a moving wagon. "How did you get these?"
"Trade secret," Valak said with a grin. "Getting the pods was easy, but I had to wait for the men to water their mules to look in the burlap sacks. When I slid the pod back in with the others, I saw that in the bottom of the sack was a pile of dark brown pebbles. Reaching deeper, I pulled a handful into the waning light. They looked like beans. "What's this?" I asked.
"They're from the sacks," he explained.
"I want you to take these back to Commander Ambrose.
Tell him I don't know what they are or where they came from, and I'm following the caravan to see where they're going."
"Are they doing something illegal?"
"I'm not sure. If these pods and beans are from Citya, then yes, it's illegal to trade with the South. One thing I do know, those men aren't traders."
I was about to ask him how he knew this when the answer clicked in my mind. "Their uniforms don't fit. Borrowed, maybe? Or stolen?"
"Most likely stolen. If you're going to borrow a uniform, I would think you'd find one that fits."
Valak was quiet for a moment, listening to the sounds of the forest. I could hear the droning of the insects grow louder as the sun set.
"Yelena, I want you to find those two men you saw this afternoon and have them escort you back to the castle. I don't want you alone. If the magician plans on attacking you again, she'll have to deal with two more, and I doubt she'd have the energy. Don't tell anyone about your tree climbing, the magician, or the caravan, but give a complete report about everything to the commander."
"What about my antidote?"
"The commander keeps his supply handy. He'll give it to you. And don't worry about your incentive. You've earned every penny. When I get back, I'll make sure you get it. Now I need to keep moving, or I'll spend the rest of the night catching up to the caravan."
"Valak, wait," I demanded. For the second time today, someone wanted to disappear before explaining everything to my satisfaction, and I was growing weary of it. He stopped. "How do I find the others?" Without the sun, my sense of direction failed. I wasn't sure if I could find my way back to the clearing, much less to the castle, on my own.
"Just follow this path."
He pointed in the direction the wagons had come from.
"I managed to shake them off my tail before I caught up with you. The soldiers were heading southwest. They're probably staking out this trail. Technically, that's the best strategy."
Valak jogged away along the path. I watched him go. He moved with the light grace and speed of a deer, his muscles rippling under his form-fitting camouflage. When he was out of sight, I crunched my feet on the loose stones of the trail, making noise. Twilight robbed the trees of color as darkness descended. Uneasiness settled over me. Every rustle caused my heart to jump, and I found myself peering over my shoulder, wishing Valak was here.
A shout pierced the air. Before I could react, a large shape rushed me, tackling me to the ground. Chapter 16.
Got you, said the man sitting on top of me.
Even with my face pressed into the stones and my mouth full of dirt, I recognized his rough voice from earlier in the day. He yanked my arms behind me. I felt cold metal bite into my wrists as I heard the snap and clink of manacles.
Isn't that a bit much, Jenko? Asked Jenko's partner.
Jenko moved off me, and I was hauled to my feet. In the semi-darkness, I saw the man that held me was thin, with a goatee. He wore his dark hair buzzed in the typical military style. A thick scar ran from his right temple to his ear. The lower half of his right ear was missing.
She was too damn hard to find. I don't want her getting away, Jenko grumbled.
His companion was about the same height but twice as wide. Thick, sculpted muscles bulged through his camouflage uniform. Small, damp curls clung to his head, and from this distance his eyes held no color except the black of his pupils. I wanted to flee. It was almost dark. I was manacled and alone with two strange men. Logically, I knew that these were the commander's soldiers, and they were professionals, but that didn't stop my pulse from racing.
You made us look bad, Jenko said. Every soldier out here is probably going to be reassigned. We'll all be cleaning out latrines because of you.
That's enough, Jenko, Colorless Eyes said. We won't be scrubbing floors. We found her. And take a look at that getup. No one expected her to go camo. That's why she was so hard to find. But still, the captain's gonna shit when he sees this.
And the captain's back at the castle? I asked, trying to prompt them in that direction. No, he's leading a line farther southwest. We'll have to report to him. I sighed at the delay. I had hoped for a quick trip back. How about you send Jenko here to find the captain while we head to the castle? Sorry, but we're not permitted to split up. We're required to travel in pairs, no exceptions. Jenko started. Yelena, I supplied.
Why are you so anxious to get back? He asked.
I'm afraid of the dark.
Colorless Eyes laughed. Somehow I doubt that. Jenko, take the cuffs off her. She's not going to run away. That's not the point of this exercise.
Jenko hesitated. I said, You have my word, Jenko. I won't run if you take off the manacles.
He grumbled some more but unlocked the cuffs. I wiped the dirt from my face.
Thanks.
He nodded and then pointed to his partner.
He's Artanas.
Ari for short.
Ari extended his hand, giving me an honor. If a soldier offered his hand, he was acknowledging me as an equal.
I shook it gravely, and then the three of us headed southwest to find their captain.
The trip to the castle was almost comical. Almost. If my stiff and sore muscles hadn't protested my every step, and if the bone-deep ache of pure exhaustion hadn't pulled at my body like a stone cloak, I would have been amused.
Jenko and Ari's captain fumed and blustered when we caught up with him.
Well, 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 look at what our two sweethearts finally found, Captain Parfit said.
His bald head was beaded with sweat that rolled down the sides of his face, soaking his collar. He was old for a captain, and I wondered if his surly disposition was the reason for his lack of promotion.
I'm supposed to have the best scouts in Commander Ambrose's guard, Parfit shouted at Ari and Jenko. Maybe you can enlighten us as to which procedure you followed that took you over 17 hours to find the bitch.
Parfit continued his verbal bashing. Even in the darkness, I could see his face turning purple. I tuned him out and studied his unit. A couple of faces smirked, agreeing with their captain. Some were resigned, as if used to his tantrums, and others wore bored and tired expressions. One man, who had shaved his entire head except for his bangs, stared with an uncomfortable intensity at me. When I made eye contact, he jerked his glance to the captain.
Nix, put the bitch in manacles, Parfit ordered,
and the man with the bangs pulled metal cuffs off his belt.
I see our two prima donnas can't be bothered to follow this unit's standard procedures.
As Nix approached, I searched for a chance to slip away. My promise to Jenko had only extended to a hands-free trip back to the castle. Ari, sensing my frame of mind, placed a large hand on my shoulder, anchoring me to his side.
"We have her word, sir, that she won't run off," he said in my defense. "Like that means anything," Parfit spat on the ground. "She has given her word," Ari repeated.
A low rumble in his voice reminded me of a huge dog growling a warning. Parfit grudgingly allowed procedure to be modified, but savored his bad temper by harassing the rest of his soldiers into formation, initiating a fast march back to the castle. I walked wedged between Ari and Jenko like some prized trophy. Ari explained that the captain didn't handle surprises well, and had been frustrated by my day-long romp in the forest.
"It doesn't help that we found you. He didn't promote us to his unit like the others. We were assigned by Valak," Jenko said.
Parfit's mood turned blacker when the dog team overtook our procession. Chaos erupted as barking dogs and more guards tangled together. I experienced a moment of panic when the canines rushed me. As it turned out, they greeted me with wagging tails and licking tongues. Their pure joy was infectious. I smiled and scratched their ears, stopping only when Parfit scowled and shouted for order. The dogs wore no collars. The kennel master was part of the tracking team. The dogs reassembled on Porter's command, following his orders without fail. The commander of the dog team seemed disappointed that Porter's dogs hadn't found me first, but she took it with better grace than Ari's captain had. She introduced herself as Captain Etta and walked beside me to ask questions about my run. I liked her easy, respectful manner. Her mop of dark blonde hair pushed the limits of military regulation. I stuck to the truth as much as I could during our conversation. When it came to questions regarding where my scent had disappeared, I lied. I explained that I had walked northward in the water for a while before heading east. Etta shook her head.
"We were so focused on you heading south. Parfit was right to look east."
My eventual destination was south, but I wanted to try and confuse the dogs before I turned.
"You succeeded. The commander won't be pleased.
Good thing Ari and Jenko found you. Had you stayed out till morning, both teams would have been demoted." The last 2 miles to the castle were a blur. Using every ounce of my dwindling energy to keep my feet moving forward, I concentrated all my strength on keeping up with the soldiers. When we stopped, it took me a moment to realize that we had entered the castle complex. It was well past midnight. The noise of our arrival bounced and amplified off the silent stone walls. The dogs followed Porter to the kennels while the weary parade of soldiers trod up the steps toward the commander's office. We finished our march among the empty desks of the throne room. Lantern light blazed from the open door of the commander's office. The two soldiers standing guard wore amused expressions, but remained quiet and still. Parfit and Etta shared a look of resignation before going in to report to the commander. I found a chair and collapsed into it, accepting the risk that I might have difficulties regaining my feet. Soon the captains returned. Parfit's face was creased in a dark frown, but Etta's showed no emotion. They dismissed their units. I was summoning the energy to stand when Etta came over and helped me to my feet.
"Thanks," I said. "The commander awaits your report."
I nodded. Etta left to rejoin her unit, and I headed toward the office. I hesitated in the doorway. I was used to the semi-darkness of the throne room, and the lantern light stung my eyes.
"Come in," Commander Ambrose ordered.
I stood before his desk. He sat immobile and impassive as always, his smooth, ethereal face barren of wrinkles. A stray thought plucked at my mind, and I wondered about his age. Gray streaks painted the commander's short hair. His rank alone suggested an older man, but his slight build and youthful face made me guess his age was closer to 40.
About 7 years older than Valak, if my estimation of Valak's age was accurate.
"Report."
I described my actions for the day in detail, including my tree swinging and the magician. Giving the same version of my encounter with the southerner that I had told Valak, I concluded my report with the caravan and Valak's orders that I return. I waited for the commander's questions.
"So Ari and Jenko didn't capture you?" he asked.
No, but they were the only ones who even came close. They passed right below a tree I hid in and were skilled enough to track Valak for a while. The commander stilled for a moment. His golden eyes looked past me as he absorbed the information.
Where are the items Valak procured?
I opened my backpack and placed the pods and beans on his desk. He picked up a yellow pod and rotated it in his hands before returning it. Grabbing a handful of beans, he hefted them, feeling their weight and texture. After sniffing one, he broke the bean in half. The inside was as unrevealing as the outside had been.
They're not native to Ixia. They must be from Citia. Yelena, take them with you and do some research. Find out what these are and where they're grown.
Me? Stunned, I had expected to dump them on the commander and forget about them.
Yes. Valak is constantly reminding me not to underestimate you, and once again you've proven yourself. General Brazel gave you a good education. I'd hate to see it go to waste.
I wanted to argue, but I was curtly dismissed. Sighing, I dragged my unwilling body to the baths. Painfully peeling off my leaf-covered clothes, I washed the mud from my face and neck before submerging into a steaming pool. There, I luxuriated in the warmth, stretching my aching muscles under the hot water to loosen them. Hoping to dissolve some of the glue from my hair, I dipped my head back, pulled my bun apart, and let the long black strands float on the surface. The gentle sounds of lapping lulled me. Strong hands grabbed my shoulders. I jerked awake under the water. Liquid filled my mouth and nose. I pushed the hands away in a panic. They released their grip for a second. I began to sink. Instinctively, I clutched my unknown assailant's arms. Before I could curse my stupidity, I was yanked out of the bath and dumped onto the cold floor. I sprang to my feet to meet the next assault, but there stood Marge with a disgusted expression anchored on her broad face. Water dripped from her hands and had soaked her sleeves. I shivered and pulled wet clumps of hair off my face.
"What the hell do you think you're doing?" I yelled.
"Saving your worthless life," she snarled.
"What?"
"Don't worry. I took no pleasure in it. Frankly, I would have rejoiced to see you drown. Justice finally served. But the commander ordered me to find you and see to your needs."
Marge grabbed a towel from the table and threw it at me.
"You may have the commander and Valak fooled into thinking you're smart. But how smart can you be to fall asleep in a deep pool of water?"
I tried to think of a rude retort, remembering Delana's advice to be nasty right back. Nothing. My brain felt waterlogged with fatigue. The idea that Marge had just saved my life kept sloshing around in my head. It was such a foreign concept that I couldn't find a proper place to dock it. Marge snorted, hatred oozing from her.
"I followed my orders. Some might even agree that rescuing you was beyond the call of duty. So don't you forget it, rat."
She spun around to leave. Her skirts wrapped around her legs, and she stumbled through the door.
So much for a dramatic exit, I thought, as I toweled dry.
I felt no gratitude toward Marge for saving my life, assuming that was what she'd done. She might have pushed me under in spite, then saved me. And I didn't owe her a favor. She had left me in a puddle of my own vomit after I had taken my love, had refused to clean out my room in Valak's suite, had written me a nasty message in the dust, and even worse, was probably leaking information about me to Brazel. If she had saved me from drowning, then, in my mind, it was a payback for some of those indiscretions, but not for all. As I saw it, she still owed me.
The hot soak helped restore some flexibility to my muscles. I peeled the leaves from my hands. Although green still clung to parts of my hair, I thought with some artful braiding I might be able to hide it.
The walk back to Valak's suite seemed endless. In a zombie-like state of mind, I passed through countless hallways, intersections, and doorways. My steps were fueled by the single-minded desire of getting to bed. For the next few days, I fell into a routine. I tasted the commander's meals, went to the library for research, and took a daily walk around the castle complex. My day as a fugitive had caused me to crave the outdoors, and if I couldn't swing through the trees, at least I could explore the grounds. I used the map of the castle that I had copied in my journal to find the library. It was a multi-level suite of rooms burgeoning with books. The smell of decay and dust floated in the air along with a sense of abandonment. I was saddened by the knowledge that this tremendous source of information was going to waste because the commander discouraged his people from educating themselves beyond what was necessary for their jobs. Within his military structure, a person was trained specifically for their position only. Learning just for the sake of learning was frowned on and greeted with suspicion. Once I had ascertained that the library was truly a forgotten place, I brought the pods and beans there instead of carrying the heavy books back to my room. I found a small nook tucked away in a corner. The nook had a wooden table which faced one of the large, egg-shaped windows that randomly perforated the back wall of the library. Sunlight streamed into the nook, and after clearing the table of dust, it became my work area. Cutting one of the yellow pods in half, I discovered it was filled with a white, mucilaginous pulp. A taste of the pulp revealed it to have a sweet and citrus flavor with a taint of sour, as if it was starting to rot. The white flesh contained seeds. I cleaned the pulp from the seeds and uncovered 36 of them. They resembled the beans from the caravan. My excitement diminished as I compared seed against bean in the sunlight. The pod seed was purple instead of brown, and when I bit into the seed, I spit it out as a strong, bitter, and astringent taste filled my mouth. Nothing close to the slightly tart and earthy taste of the brown beans. Assuming that the pods were a fruit and the beans edible, I pulled out every botany book I could find in the library and piled them on my table. Then I went through the shelves again. This time, I grabbed any volume with information about poisons. A much smaller stack. Valak had probably taken the interesting ones back to his office. My third trip through the shelves was an effort to find books on magic. Nothing. I paused by an empty shelf, an oddity in this tightly packed library, and wondered if it had contained manuals about magic. Considering how the commander viewed magic, it was logical to destroy any pertinent information. On a whim, I explored the lower levels of the bookcase under the empty shelf. Thinking that a book from the empty shelf could have slid back behind the other books, I took out all the texts on the lower shelves. My efforts were rewarded by the discovery of a slim volume entitled Magical Power Sources. I hugged the book to my chest as paranoia gripped me. Scanning the library, I made sure no one was there. With sweaty palms, I hid the book in my backpack. I planned to read it later, preferably in my room with the door locked. Giddy with my illicit acquisition, I searched the various rooms of the library until I found a comfortable chair. Before dragging it back to my nook, I beat the dust from its purple velvet cushions. It was the most elegant seat I had seen in the castle, and I wondered who had used it before me. Had the dead king been a bibliophile? The considerable collection of books said as much. Either that, or he had shown his librarian great favor. I spent many hours in that chair reading through the botany books and discovering nothing. I planned to decipher the pod and bean puzzle while I researched information for myself. The tedious work was at least broken into small sessions by my tasting the commander's meals and by my afternoon strolls around the castle. It had been 4 days since the exercise, and that afternoon my walk had a purpose. I scouted for a place with a view of the east gate, but where I wouldn't be obvious to the flow of people passing through. Valak still hadn't returned from his mission, and closing ceremonies had been performed the night before at the fire festival, ending the week-long celebration. Rand, looking hungover, had informed me this morning that Brazel and his retinue would finally leave the castle, via the east gate, to go home. My desire to see Brazel's retreating back with my own eyes had driven me to seek the perfect position. The barracks for the commander's soldiers filled both the northeast and southwest corners of the castle complex. In the northeast barracks, the L-shaped building extended from the north gate to the east gate, and a large rectangular training area had been built next to the east leg of the building. There was a wooden fence around the yard, and when training was in progress, the fence attracted the castle's various residents to stop along it to watch the exercises. That afternoon, I joined in with a group of observers, who not only had a clear view of the fighting drills, but the east gate as well. Rand's information proved accurate. Soon I was rewarded by a parade of green and black-clad soldiers. I could see Brazel on his dappled mare, riding among his most trusted advisors at the end of the procession. Brazel's retinue ignored the people around them. As I watched Brazel's back, Rayad's ghost appeared next to me. He smiled as he waved goodbye to his father. A shudder vibrated down my spine. I glanced around. Did anyone else see him? The group of people that I had been standing with had dispersed. Had Rayad scared them off? But when I looked again, his ghost was gone. A hand touched my arm. I flinched.
"Good riddance to that lot," Ari said, tilting his head toward the east gate.
Seeing him for the first time in the sunlight, I noticed that Ari's eyes were such a pale blue that in the darkness his eyes had seemed to hold no color. Ari stood with Jenko on the other side of the fence. Both wore the sleeveless shirts and short pants that the soldiers liked to train in. Sweat-soaked and streaked with dirt, their faces and bodies sported new cuts and bruises.
"Bet you're as glad as we are to see them go," Jenko said.
Resting his wooden training sword on the fence, he rubbed the sweat off his face with the bottom of his shirt. "Yes, I am," I said. Looking toward the east gate, the three of us stood in companionable silence for a moment, watching Brazel's entourage disappear through the gate.
"We want to thank you, Yelena," Ari said.
"What for?"
"The commander promoted us to captains. He said you gave us a good report," Jenko said.
Surprised and pleased that the commander would heed my words, I smiled at them. I could see Ari and Jenko shared a loyalty to one another, an obvious bond of friendship and trust. 3 years ago, I had felt that kind of kinship with May and Kara at the orphanage, but Rayad had torn me away, and the empty space inside me still ached. Rand had given me friendship, but there was still a distance. I longed to connect with someone. Unfortunately, my life as the food taster made it impossible. Who would take the risk of connecting with me when my odds of living through the next year were little to none?
"We're scouting for the commander's elite guard now," Jenko said with pride in his voice.
"We owe you one. Anytime you need help, just let us know," Ari said.
His words gave me a bold idea. Brazel might be gone, but he was still a threat. I thought fast, searching for reasons why my plan wouldn't be to my benefit. "I need help," I said.
Surprise flashed over their faces. Ari recovered first.
"With what?" he asked warily.
"I need to learn how to defend myself. Can you teach me self-defense and how to use a weapon?" I held my breath. Was I asking too much? If they said no, I hadn't lost anything. At least I had tried.
Ari and Jenko looked at each other. Eyebrows twitched, heads tilted, lips pursed, and hands made small movements. I watched their silent conversation in amazement as they discussed my request.
"What kind of weapon?" Ari asked. Again, that hesitation evident in his voice.
My mind raced. I needed something that was small enough to hide within my uniform.
"A knife," I said, knowing I'd have to return Rand's to the kitchen.
More facial expressions were exchanged. I thought Ari might be agreeing, but Jenko looked queasy, as if the idea didn't sit well with him. Finally, I couldn't take it anymore. "Look," I said, "I'll understand if you refuse. I don't want to get you into trouble, and I know how Jenko feels about me. I believe his exact words were, 'She's a criminal.' So if the answer is no, that's fine with me."
They stared at me in astonishment.
"How did you—"
Jenko started to say, but Ari punched him on the arm.
"She overheard us in the forest, you dope. How close were you?"
15 feet.
"Damn."
Ari shook his head, which caused his tight blonde curls to bounce.
"We're more worried about Valak. We'll train you if he doesn't object. Agreed?"
"Agreed." Ari and I shook hands. When I turned to Jenko, he seemed deep in thought.
"A switchblade," he declared, grabbing my hand.
"What?" I asked.
"A switchblade would be better than a knife," Jenko said.
"And where would I carry this switchblade?"
"Strapped to your thigh. You cut a hole in your pants pocket. Then, if you're attacked, you pull it out, hit the switch, and a 9-inch blade leaps to your disposal."
Jenko demonstrated the motion to me and mock-stabbed Ari, who clutched his stomach dramatically and fell over.
"Perfect," I thought.
Thrilled by the idea of learning to defend myself, I asked, "When do we start?" Jenko scratched his goatee.
Since Valak isn't back, we could start with some basic self-defense moves. Nothing objectionable about that.
Moves she could have learned by watching the soldiers train, Ari said, agreeing with his partner.
They decided. Right now, they said in unison.